You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Broadway Gives Back Podcast. I'm your host, Jan Svensson. This podcast spotlights Broadway actors, shows, and organizations in their pursuit of social impact and philanthropy. Join us as some of the brightest lights on Broadway share their stories about their favorite charities and how they got involved, and the people and the causes who benefited from these philanthropic efforts. Welcome to the Broadway Gives Back Podcast, Season 2. I'm so excited to welcome a special guest today to kick off the new season. Joel Grey is best known for his immortal portrayal of the MC in Cabaret, which won him the Tony and an Academy Award. But Joel's had a distinguished career for over 70 years, from tap dancing in George M. and the nearly invisible Amos Hart in Chicago, to The Wizard of Oz in Wicked, Moonface Martin in Anything Goes, and many more. He co-directed the Tony Award-winning revival of The Normal Heart, and he recently directed the remarkable off-Broadway revival of Fiddler on the Roof, performed in Yiddish, which won the Drama Desk for Best Revival of a Musical. He is an acclaimed photographer and author, as well as being a passionate advocate for a number of very important causes, and I am so thrilled to have him here today. Joel, willkommen, bienvenue, welcome to the Broadway Gives Back Podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
You know, you're my opening act, so to speak, for this second season, and I was very specific. I wanted to launch this podcast after taking a summer hiatus, but I wanted to launch it around the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And I wanted you as a guest to talk about the work we did making that commercial after 9/11 to help bring back Broadway and the spirit of New York after those terrorist attacks. And I wanted to talk about your memories of that day. And I guess maybe we could start with the day before we did the video shoot. We all got together to record the music. And I remember you standing in the front row. You were standing with Bebe and Stokes, and you were keeping time to the music and singing and smiling, and you were doing these little fist bumps with your hands to keep time with the beat. And you filled me with so much hope during a time where there was so much despair. And I just wondered, what were your memories of that day?
I too was caught up in the excitement of music and artistry and community coming together to make a difference, to speak up, and to be able to shout out, it's up to you, New York, New York.
Exactly. So it was those iconic New York, New York words in that song. And I remember the day we actually shot the video, all the casts walked in costume from their theaters to the Booth Theater, where we had a little briefing meeting. And then Jerry Mitchell taught some choreography to everybody. And then we walked into Times Square, and you were again in the front row, and you were standing next to Betty Buckley and I think Katie Huffman, right?
Yes, sounds right.
Yeah. And I remember we were doing the choreography, and we had to start and stop a few times, but we ran through it several times, and there were fire trucks coming down Broadway going downtown to Ground Zero. And I remember every time a fire truck would come by, everybody would stop and we would all sort of clap and pray and send some good wishes to all the firefighters. What memories do you have of the actual video shoot and being in Times Square that day?
The idea that we are a community and that we're all suffering and all fearful and all hopeful at the same time. And seeing people that I hadn't seen in a long time and people I loved for years, you know, close friends and actors. And people just kept filtering in. And before you knew it, it was giant and inspiring. And we needed inspiration. And it was up to us to pass that on. That was the job. that day.
It was, it really was. Thinking about that day, it reminds me a little bit of, it's very relevant right now. It reminds me of what's going on where Broadway's returning. Broadway's back after 18 months of a shutdown due to COVID. And I wanted to ask you, how have you been doing the last 18 months and what have you been doing?
Taking photographs.
A new book coming out soon, I'm guessing, huh?
Well, maybe. I would guess that could be. But, you know, I was home. I was in my space taking care of the health safety rules and wondering about them all the time. How serious is this? What are we supposed to be doing? And unfortunately, no real answers came. And today, I feel there's still so much confusion and fear of the unknown. And yet we're here summoning up all our strengths, trying to reopen Broadway and have it be successful and not frightening or dark. And it's a risk. And I think everybody knows that. But there's something about the theater community that just makes you so proud to be a part of it, knowing that despite the risks, we all want to live and live in the theater and live in our totality. But it's very tricky, I think.
It is tricky. And I keep thinking about the concept of science. And I guess science is ever changing. And as we get more data, the news changes and the guidelines change. And I think we all are just trying to be flexible flyers and react and keep as safe as possible and trust each other, which is the hard part sometimes. But it's very exciting. And I'm looking forward to being back in that theater and feeling connected to people and wearing a mask. I wanted our listeners to get to know you better. And I thought maybe I'd ask you a few sort of personal questions. Not too personal, don't worry. You know, you're almost 90 years young, and I feel like we could learn so much from you and your amazing experiences. So if you had to use three adjectives, Joel, to describe yourself, what would you choose?
Love, excitement, and dreaming.
Great. And I would say adorable too. What do you most give a damn about?
People, my family, my children, my wonderful friends, my fellow actors, humanity, and the best of humanity. I still have a dream about that.
That's great. Speaking of dreams, is there a dream that you've yet to achieve that you'd still like to work on?
To dream the impossible dream. No, forgive me. Stokes, forgive me. Everybody, forgive me. It's not a role I ever thought I would play.
Speaking of dreaming, and you've done so many amazing things, but can you name one of the things that you're most proud of and why?
I think it would have to be something between Fiddler and The Normal Heart, both about difficulty and tragedy and hopefulness. They're both so loaded with those elements and hopefulness in times of difficulty.
Okay, now I have tears in my eyes, so I think I need a hug, but I'm going to give you a virtual one. Let's pivot a little bit. Let's talk about your amazing stage career, too. And I have to start with Cabaret. You won a Tony. You won the Oscar, a Golden Globe, a BAFTA. you got to work with Bob Fosse, and I think you're one of 9 people who've ever won a Tony and an Oscar for the same role. But I read somewhere, and I don't know if this is true, that you weren't necessarily Bob Fosse's first choice for the film. Is that true?
How about last choice?
What's the story?
I had great respect for Bob, and I think he made a magnificent movie. And I've known him for many, many years, but I think he had a notion that he wanted to recreate the MC. And I don't know whether that included his participation and maybe playing it himself in his dreams, or just, you know, bad choicing and bad thinking. I don't know what, I have no idea. It was just so bizarre. And everybody said no to him, to Bob Fosse. They said no. And that was a tough thing for him to swallow. And we never talked about it. No, I never heard anything. And you know, those things sneak out. But I am grateful for the film. I'm grateful for his guidance and his talent. And I'm glad he was overruled.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
You've worked with so many people, from Kander and Ebb and Hal Prince, Jerry Herman, Stephen Schwartz, George C. Wolfe, Larry Kramer, so many people. Can you talk a little bit about some of the collaborations that have meant the most to you?
Well, they're all interesting and different and the same. And it's about finding a common idea about the piece and the character that you collaborate. And that collaboration sometimes is challenging. Sometimes it's easy, but it's never the same.
And it really is all about collaboration. I was thinking, you know, you're such a collaborator and you've worked with so many people, and then you have the other side of you, which is your photography work. Your photos, I believe you have photos in a permanent collection at the Whitney Museum, and you've had 5 books of photography in print. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the photography and what it means to you as an artist.
Well, it's something that I've always done, along with being an actor, just for my own pleasure and my own, you know, development as a human. I've always loved photography. I did it early in my life while I was a youngster. I was once. Hey, I was a youngster.
You're still acting like a youngster to me. Your spirit is amazing. You came out publicly at, I guess it was in 2015, at the age of 82, speaking of being a youngster. And I wonder what prompted you at age 82 to come out? And how has that changed your life? And why did you do that at that point in time?
It seemed like a small way to contribute to a wholeness in the society and to not be separate and not to be limited by that separation. And for me, sexuality was always something mysterious and really complicated. It never was black or white. I thought it was good for the country, good for the humanity to acknowledge certain possibilities. And it had nothing to do with how much I loved my family and my wife and my world. But if it was going to be in our society a negative, a punishment, and I could say something that would mitigate that, I decided that was time to do that. And it was not a big deal. And I'm not a different person.
Yeah, I look forward to the day. I hope we're here where we don't have to come out anymore, where it just is what it is, right?
It looks like that could be down the line.
You're also a passionate advocate for a number of causes over these years, and causes and organizations that are particularly important to you. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about some of the philanthropic work that you've done or some of the causes that you care most about.
Well, there's nothing original. I mean, we're talking about human rights and loving each other and making the world or being part of a more loving place that we can create or encourage by our own love.
So there's a lot of words for this: philanthropy, social impact, charity, cause, social responsibility, being of service, purpose, but whatever you call it, I wondered, you're saying what it means for you in your life is really about this transference or sharing of love. And there's a lot of people listening to this podcast, and I think they would want your advice on how to do that. How can people become everyday philanthropists and share that love?
Think about the beginnings and being nurtured or not being nurtured and the damning aspects of not and the beautiful gift of being nurtured and how those two things are somehow pitted against each other and working and striving to be on the side of the angels.
And these days, that's kind of hard. We were talking a little bit before the recording of this podcast about how tough things are in the world, and things are just every day you wake up and there's more bad news. So it's about having that sense of hope, you were saying, and continuing to be hopeful. How do you do that? How do you find that feeling in yourself every day?
I think it's something that my parents gave me. Oddly enough, my father more so, because he was a very advanced human being. And my mother was like a child in our family. And he took care of her in many ways the way he did my younger brother and myself. She just didn't have a solid, loving background that gave her that.
Let's talk a little bit more about your growing up years and your family. You know, as you were saying, family is so defining in who people are with what they do get, but also sometimes in what they don't get. And a lot of people become philanthropists or push for social change because of their backgrounds, being raised one way or another, because they didn't get enough and they want to make sure everybody gets, or because they did get it and they want to make sure that everybody gets it. I just wondered if you could talk a little bit more about your background.
Well, I was born in a difficult time in the 30s, where I think a lot of people were fearful for their lives in Cleveland, Ohio. My mother came from a family of five daughters. She was the second oldest. And my grandfather was a fruiterer. He went down to the Cleveland place where everybody went at 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning. And it was a hard life. And my grandmother had five daughters. Oh my God. And making it all work was extremely difficult. And there wasn't enough time to give to everyone. And if you didn't have, how can you give? So, you know, those are the things that sort of shaped my mother's family. And then my father's family was about art. They all played musicians. They played orchestra in the orchestra. They sang. One was a ballet dancer. And my father was the breadwinner who at 16 played the clarinet beautifully. And so he was this prize. And I think my mother sensed that. And it was a way to move forward as people want to do. And to run away from that very difficult, dark place where I think everybody was worried about existing. And my grandpa worked just like a dog. And everybody, you know, sees that and feels that. And art somehow helped in my father's house. Everybody had some love for that art and communication and music. And so it was a very different vibe. And I learned very different things from my parents, and both good, some bad, but a lot of good. That's the difference, I think, is the balance of good and bad as to whether or not you go forward. Why am I telling you all this?
I don't know, because I'm asking you questions and you are a wise 89-year-old man who's telling us some good advice. But you're right. I think that, you know, there is good and bad, as we were talking about. And I love your spirit of hopefulness. And I love that the arts have provided so much so much reward for you in your life. And I do think that that's really good advice for people listening, that, you know, the arts heal and the arts, you know, teach as well. And the arts can make you feel good. And during these times, sometimes we need to feel good. And we need to feel connected.
Today, we need to feel good today.
Exactly. I think that's a really good note to take a pause here and stop. We need to feel good today. And Joel Gray, you are making us feel good today. Thank you so much for being on this podcast. And I'll be thinking of you throughout this opening of Broadway, because I felt like you were part of the opening of Broadway 20 years ago. And here we are doing it again. So
believe in the dream, right?
Believe in the dream. Yes.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for being part of this. I really appreciate it. It's just been an honor to talk to you.
See you soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Broadway Gives Back podcast. Broadway Gives Back is part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Special thanks to my producing partner, writer, editor, and friend, Jim Lochner. And thank you to everyone at BPN, including Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and Kimberly Garris. I'd also like to thank Julian Hills from the Bulldog Agency and Eric Becker from Broderick Street Music. If you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you stream your podcasts. You can also follow Broadway Gives Back on Facebook and Instagram at Broadway Gives Back Podcast, and on Twitter at Broadway Gives. To learn more, visit bpn.fm/Broadway Gives Back. Thanks so much.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.